I had never had my photo taken before or since. To be honest, I was a little nervous. But when we got the photo back, I understood how special it was. The photo actually captured a very happy moment in my life and froze it forever. "Send her that," my mother said.
"Really?"
I asked. It was the only photo that we owned. Instead of answering, she got the box where she kept all my report cards and certificates to get the photo. She also handed me money for stamps. "Your friend is waiting to hear from you," my mother said. Elated, I went outside to write Caitlin a letter. 6th December, 1997. "Dear Caitlin, hello. Many thanks for your letter. It was so great. My birthday is on the 9th of March. What do you know of Zimbabwe? Tell me about USA. Thank you for your nice picture. This is mine. On the picture, you look really beautiful. Keep up your smartness, cleanliness. Hope you are well, and we will not let down each other by not replying letters. Say hello to everyone. Bye. Hope your impatience on my picture has decreased. Your caring friend, Martin." Since the holidays were coming, I added, "Have a wonderful and peaceful Christmas holiday and a prosperous new year. Let's keep our friendship strong. It will never end." And then, just to be certain she would not get cross with me for taking so long to send her a photo, I apologized for taking so long to reply and promised to look for a better picture to send in my next letter.
January 1998. Caitlin. My crush on Matt grew until I could not take the pressure that whirred inside me every time I saw him in algebra. Lauren was in that class and sat in the row next to me. One day in late October, I passed her a note that read, "Matt is so hot. I am freaking out." Lauren scribbled something quickly and threw the note back to me before the teacher turned around. "I dare you to touch him. No, I double dare you." She had a good point. What did I have to lose? I built up my courage and then tapped him on his shoulder midway through class. Lauren almost fell off her seat. "Do you have an extra pencil? My tip just broke off." I lied. I had at least a dozen mechanical pencils in my bag. He turned around and flashed me a smile that I thought might melt me. "Here," he whispered, handing me his. He then reached into his back pocket for a spare. At the end of class, I offered him his pencil back. "It's cool," he said. "Just keep it." "Thanks," I said, hoping he could not feel the heat radiating from my body. That night, I was trying to concentrate on homework, but could not stop fantasizing about kissing Matt. Finally, I grabbed a black Sharpie and marched into my closet. There, on the wall, I drew an eye with long lashes, followed by a heart and a stick figure, next to which I wrote, "Matt Johnson," and dated it, 10/29/1997. The very next day, he asked me out. It's like I willed it to happen. That was October 30th. Which meant Halloween was our first real date. It was official. We were a couple. I made another note in my closet. Kate plus Matt, October 31st, 1997. Our school had a costume party, and I went dressed as a punk rocker. My mom bought me pink hair paint, and I wore a blue sequined mini dress and a leather jacket. Matt borrowed his friend's football jersey, and his friend wore Matt's soccer shirt. I thought that was pretty lame. As it turned out, Matt was just really shy. Other than the Halloween party, we didn't really do anything besides talk on the phone a few times. And even then, I did all the talking. We once met at the food court at the mall with a bunch of other friends, but he barely spoke to me, and he never once tried to kiss me or hold my hand. I started to wonder if he even liked me. And then I noticed Drew, who played soccer with Matt. Frustrated, I wrote in my closet, I am still going with Matt, but I like Drew. By the time I dumped Matt, Drew was dating someone else, and I already had a new crush, Nathaniel. We started dating in late November, and then broke up a week later. I still liked him, but so did my friend Chrissy. It was just getting too complicated. By then, I had filled up half my closet wall with boy-crazy confessionals. I needed a break. Taking a break gave me time to think about other things, like school and softball. I was on the team, but not very good. My coach suggested practicing at home, so I started doing that with my dad on weekends. We were throwing the ball in our backyard when my dad asked, "Have you heard from your pen pal?" The question startled me. I had not really been thinking about Martin since I sent him my photo. I was too swept up with boys. And then, just like that, his letter arrived the following week. I could always tell Martin's letters from the rest of the mail. They looked and felt different. Thinner paper, more exotic and colorful stamps. This letter was thicker than the last. I ripped it open and gasped when I saw that he had sent me a photo. Seeing him standing there dressed in his school uniform changed something in me. Martin was no longer this faceless fantasy. He was real. He looked much younger and smaller than I had imagined, like a little boy in his green shorts and shirt. My very first thought was, "He's so cute!" Not in a boyfriend way, more like a little brother. He had written on the back of the photo that it was taken 2 years before, in 1995, which explained why he looked so young. He also looked quite serious, though I could see the sparkle of a smile in his eyes. I assumed he was standing between his father and probably his older brother, Nation, who looked a lot like Martin, only taller. I ran up to my room and immediately placed this photo between one of me, my brother, and parents, taken at my grandparents' lake house, where we visited often, and another one of me goofing around in my backyard with Lauren. I kept all of my favorite photos beneath the glass on top of my desk, so I could see them always. And then, I read his letter several times over. I loved the way he wrote. While I understood all the words, they still seemed foreign. Every letter began with, "Hello," a greeting I'd never seen written before. I imagined his voice to be sing-songy and upbeat. In his letters, he used lots of exclamation points, except instead of a dot at the bottom, he drew tiny bubbles. They reminded me of smiley faces, and I imagined him to be as happy as his handwriting. His language was so formal. He sounded so smart. I wanted to send him something special in my next letter, so I went to the mall that weekend with Lauren to find the right gift. Claire's was our first stop. It was a jewelry store where you could get a pair of hoop earrings for $5. We also went to Spencer's, which sold gag gifts. Back then, keychains were super popular, especially these rectangular metal plates with funny references like Heartbreaker, Lucky, or Diva. I had about 2 dozen, which I had clipped onto a huge key ring that was attached to the outside zipper pocket of my backpack. Lots of kids did this, which meant everyone clanged when they walked through the hallways at school, like a jingle orchestra. I chose one for Martin that had a glittery swirl pattern on it without any words. I also bought one for Lauren that said, "Best friend." She got me the same one. We already had best friend necklaces. Mine said best, and hers said friend. Back home, I wrote Martin another letter, thanking him for the photo, and sent him the keychain and a picture from my winter dance. In it, I'm wearing a headband that looks like a tiara and a burgundy dress. I asked him to please send me another photo. I hoped it would be more current. A month or so later, I received a 4-page letter from Martin. No one had ever sent me such a long letter. This time, instead of writing, "Hello," he addressed me as the Queen, which was so funny. It didn't feel like it did when Richie said it. My mom and dad called me Queen Caitlin as well, but in a much nicer way than my brother did. I had no idea where Martin got the idea, but it made me feel that much closer to him, like he was part of our family. He wrote, 3rd March, 1998. Dear Caitlin the Queen, well, it's me again. I don't know how to thank you. Thank you very much for sending the nicest letter in my life. Thank you for the glittering and attractive charm. What a friend, Caitlin. Thank you for the nice picture of yours. You look extremely beautiful, like a queen. Queen Caitlin. I thought it was funny he called the keychain a charm and was so glad he liked it. Then I noticed at the very top of the letter, he wrote a P.S., which said, I am making you very nice African-type earrings. I will send them in my next letter. How could he possibly know that I collected earrings? I had more than 100 pairs, a collection of big hoops and long dangly beads and small studs shaped either like hearts or daisies or baby animals. I kept my most valuable ones in a jewelry box my parents gave me for Christmas the previous year. It was blue velvet and had my initials, CBS, in gold letters. I also had a pink plastic caboodles box that looked like a small suitcase, which I had covered in stickers. That's where I kept all the plastic jewelry I got at Claire's. In all my searching for new earrings, I had never seen a pair from Africa. Martin went on to list all the holidays he celebrated, and I was relieved to learn that many were the same as ours. Another thing we had in common. But then he wrote that Zimbabwe was still developing. I didn't quite understand what he meant. I knew I was developing. I had grown 2 inches since September and had just gotten my first training bra with my mom. But I wasn't quite sure how a country developed. Martin said that there were a few schools and hospitals and wrote that some students learned under trees due to the shortage of classrooms. But then at the end of that sentence, he wrote, fun. It certainly sounded nicer than being stuck in a classroom all day, as long as it was not pig cooking day. When he wrote, patients have to stay about 10 per bed. Just imagine. Fun. I couldn't imagine that, no matter how hard I tried. So I skipped to the next line, which made me smile. Our friendship will always last forever. Sometime, we will meet one another. I really hoped this would come true. On the next page, he described life in his country. Lines like, many workers in Zimbabwe receive a small pay, which can't even feed the families. And, two families have to share a room in some parts of Zimbabwe, stuck out. We had poverty in the United States, though I had never really seen it up close. I figured Zimbabwe was similar. I also thought that Martin came from a wealthy family, because he was wearing a school uniform in the photo he sent. I assumed he went to a private school, which is expensive in America. There was a Catholic school in neighboring Lansdale, where the girls wore dark green skirts and the boys wore slacks. Everyone had to wear a yellow shirt. It was supposed to be an excellent education, but I thought I would die from the boredom of wearing the same thing every day. Still, those kids gave me context for Martin and his life. I imagined he lived in a home like mine. But then, he wrote that Sakubva, the town where I was sending his letters, was a high-density suburb and filled with poor people and crime, like L.A. I had never been to L.A., but knew that movie stars lived there, as well as poor people. Maybe that was what Martin meant. I didn't dwell on it long, because the very next paragraph talked about clothes, my favorite subject. We also have Nike, Reebok, Adidas, and many others, Martin wrote. My best is Reebok. All of these brands were popular in school. The boys especially liked to wear oversized shirts with Reebok or Nike logos on them. I wanted to get one for Martin on my next trip to the mall. On the last page, he drew a man wearing a grass skirt and a crown of feathers and wrote, "Our traditional suit, but many people wear real clothes." He also sketched a hut with a grass roof and wrote, "Some Zimbabwean house." I had seen photos of grass huts in National Geographic magazines, but in the photo Martin sent me, there was a brick building in the background that had to be his school. It looked a lot like mine. The next line really cracked me up. "Have you heard the one from Spicy Girls, which says friendship never ends?" I laughed out loud because he called them spicy and hoped that the line would become our motto. At the end of the letter, he wrote, "Send me a US dollar and I will send you ours in my next letter." I had actually thought about sending him a dollar to show him our currency. It was like we were on the same wavelength. There was so much else I wanted to tell him about the United States and to learn about Zimbabwe. I took out my multicolor pen to write him back. It was the size of a fat cigar and had little levers in different colors circling its top, like a crown. I clicked the green button to describe our seasons, and then the pale blue one to explain that our president was Bill Clinton and our vice president was Al Gore. I chose a dark blue to write, "I have also sent a dollar bill." After I finished writing, I opened my desk drawer where I kept all my babysitting money. I found the crispest dollar bill and folded it into my letter. As I addressed the envelope, I felt another kind of fluttering in my stomach. It was a different feeling from my boy crushes. It felt more like an awakening. The world was gigantic, and I had a friend who lived halfway across it.
April 1998, Martin. I had always wanted to see an American dollar. People often said that money grew on trees in America. Seeing this crisp green bill tucked so neatly in Caitlin's letter made me think this may have been true. It looked so new, so hopeful, like a leaf in springtime. I had just laid it on the bed when Nation came into the house. "Whoa," he said. "Where did you get that?" "Caitlin sent it," I said. We both bent over it to get a better look. It was bigger than our Zimbabwean dollar, though I rarely saw those either. My parents used coins primarily. "How much do you think it is worth?" I asked. Nation shrugged his shoulders. We both knew it was worth more than a Zimbabwean dollar, especially with inflation, which was escalating daily. Suddenly, the room was awash with a big swath of sunlight. I turned to see my mother's small silhouette in the doorway. "Why are you all standing around?" she asked. "Your father will be home soon." "My," I said, handing her the dollar. "I received another gift from Caitlin." My mother's eyes grew wide, like a child spotting an elephant. "Why would she send such a thing?" she asked, though it sounded more like an accusation. Her question startled me. Suddenly, I worried that my request for a dollar may have been out of line. Truly, I was just curious. We were sharing information about each other's culture, but I realized by the look on my mom's face that I had asked too much. "I asked her to send it," I said. "I did not think it was such a big deal." "Well, it certainly is," she said, still stern. "Your friend must be very wealthy, and you must keep this safe, Martin." When I showed my father the bill that evening, his face lit up. "This is the real thing," he said. "How much is it worth?" Nation asked. My father shook his head. "I will take it to work tomorrow to ask my boss," he said. "He will know." My mother winced. "You must bring it back," she said. "That's Martin's money." My father turned to me and winked. "Your mother, always so worried." That following evening, my father arrived more joyous than I had seen him in many months. "Your friend gave you a very generous gift," he explained. "This may be worth 20 Zim dollars." I was stunned. It felt too big of a responsibility for me, so I asked my mother to keep it in a safe place until I knew what to do with it. The dollar stayed put for 2 weeks. By then we had been eating sadza for days on end, no beans or even collard greens, and our milli meal was running low. I could see the strain on my mother. She would make a pot every morning and we'd eat it clean. In the evenings, our portions were smaller than usual. Simba complained he was still hungry. "Mai," I said one day as my stomach groaned from hunger, "let's use Caitlin's money for groceries." She shook her head. "That is for your future, Martin," she said. "Our future is now," I explained. She reluctantly agreed and then climbed on top of her bed to get the dollar from the box. We went to the post office to exchange it. The teller did not even have to check any charts or use a calculator. "One American dollar is 24 Zim dollars," she said. My mother looked as surprised as I felt. My heart quickened. I nodded to her, and she exchanged the dollar. We went directly to the market and bought enough groceries for 2 weeks. That night, we ate beans and collard greens with our sadza. And the following morning, we had bread and tea for the first time in many months. It was April in Zimbabwe, but all this good food felt like Christmas. All thanks to my new friend in America. The next evening, with a full belly, I wrote Caitlin a letter. I thanked her for the very generous dollar bill and told her I would send her something in return soon. I considered sending her a Zimbabwean dollar, but knew that was one day's worth of sadza. So instead, I made the only promise that I knew I could keep, that I would always write back, no matter what.
May 1998. Caitlin. Seventh grade spring was ridiculously busy and dramatic. Drew asked me out again in December, and then we broke up on New Year's Eve. I wanted to start 1998 fresh, and that meant dating Brennan. He and I were together for less than a month when Krista told me that she liked him too. That was tricky. By then, Krista was my best friend. Lauren and I were in a fight. She gave me back the best part of our friendship necklace. Then Krista and I went to the mall and bought a new necklace together. Then Krista got so mad at me for dating Brennan that she gave me back the friend part of our necklace. So I was without a best friend, but still dating Brennan. I was torn. I really liked Brennan, but he wasn't worth losing a best friend over. I broke up with him, and he started dating Krista. I couldn't believe she said yes. I was so upset that I didn't invite her to my 13th birthday on March 28th. It was a Saturday, so I had a party and all my friends came, except Krista. Lauren and I were back to being best friends. I had 6 different best friends that spring, at different times and for different reasons. It was hard to keep straight. At least there was one constant in my life, Martin. He kept writing. Most of the other students in my English class had stopped corresponding with their pen pals after 2 or 3 letters. But by the end of 7th grade, I had at least 6 letters from Martin. I kept them all in my desk drawer. In the early ones, he'd ask simple questions like, "What's your favorite music?" and "What does your house look like?" But in the last letter he sent me, he asked how much it cost to go to school. I figured he did not realize I was in public school, and I wondered if he would think differently of me as a result. I hoped not. In that same letter, he said his dad worked at a paper mill. I wasn't sure what that was, or if we even had them in the United States. I bought all my stationery at Staples, and I did notice that while my stationery was either a pristine white with pale blue lines through it, or pink with decorative edges, Martin's was always different. Some letters were written on grainy gray paper. Some were written on the back of homework assignments. Sometimes he wrote in pen, other times in pencil. But his penmanship was constant, a bubbly cursive. He always curled the tip of his H's, and his Z's looked like chubby 3's. His letters always put me in the best mood. They were often funny, too. I had heard monkeys lived in the trees in Africa and asked him if that was true. He wrote back that there were lots of monkeys living in Mutare and that he actually got into a fight with one once. Monkeys are really nasty, he wrote, which made me so sad because I had wanted a pet monkey for the longest time. He said there were more baboons than monkeys in his hometown, and everyone considered them a nuisance. I think our baboons are like your squirrels, he wrote. In my response, I wrote that many people in the U.S. thought squirrels were annoying, but I actually loved them. That's because I loved all animals. At the time, I had a pet rabbit called Louis. I got him in sixth grade. He had long, floppy ears that bounced off the ground when he hopped. Louis was so attached to me that one day he followed me out the door to go visit Heather, my best friend and neighbor. It was the sweetest thing. He started following me all over the neighborhood. My mom put a little bell on his collar, so we always knew where he was, which was unnecessary because he never left my side. He became our neighborhood mascot. When I played kickball in the street, he'd run whenever I ran. The only time it was a problem was when we played flashlight tag. Everyone always knew where I was because Louis's bell would ring. I told Martin about Louis, expecting him to tell me about his pets. Instead, he wrote, "The story of your rabbit is very amusing indeed. In Zimbabwe, we eat rabbits. They are quite delicious." I was so horrified. I didn't know how to respond. So I put that letter aside and then got so swept up with life. When I finally sat down to write him back several weeks later, I made a point not to mention Louis. I ended with, "If you could please send me a new picture of you so I can show my friends how nice you are. You are the best pen pal that I have ever had. Again, I am so sorry for not writing back right away. Thank you for being a great friend. Best of friends." Before I sealed up the envelope, I remembered that in all my crazy drama, I forgot Martin's birthday, which was 3 weeks before mine. I also remembered that I wanted to send him a Reebok t-shirt. His birthday was the perfect reason. I called Lauren to see if she wanted to go shopping later that afternoon. My mom drove us to a discount store in town called Ross, where I found a white shirt with blue trim that had Reebok across the front in matching navy blue. Perfect, I thought. As I was paying for it, Lauren asked, "Caitlin, are you, like, in love with Martin?" The question caught me off guard and was hard to answer. "I love him like a brother," I said finally. "Ew!" she said. "That's like incest." "You know what I mean," I said, swatting at her. "He feels like a member of my family." Back home, I wrapped the shirt and attached a note that read, "This is what all the cool kids in Hatfield wear."
June 1998. Martin. The postman delivered mail to Shisamba Singles every Saturday. I would wait for him to arrive on his bicycle, hoping there might be something from Caitlin. He would always ring his bell and then call out the names of people who had letters and packages. Whenever I heard his husky voice shout, "Martin Ganda," I would sprint as fast as I could, knowing it had to be from Caitlin. I'd then spend the next hour reading and rereading whatever she had written. Her stories let me imagine what it was like to be an American teenager. We were growing up together, 10,000 miles apart, as she once wrote in a letter. I'd always share her news and photos with my family and friends, who by now considered her their friend as well. Her letters lifted everyone's spirits. After I had practically memorized every detail, I would give them to my mother, who kept them in a biscuit tin. One June morning, the postman handed me a large envelope. It was bigger than a textbook and squishy. I knew it was from Caitlin by the small hats, smiley faces, and stars that decorated the package. Next to my name, she wrote BFF in purple glitter ink. I knew, thanks to her, this meant best friends forever. I fought the urge to open the package right there, in front of everyone else waiting for mail. Back home, I decided to go inside our hut. I wanted privacy. Since we shared a common outdoor area with four families, someone was always hanging around. The joke was, if you wanted privacy, you just had to close your eyes. But during the day, our home was usually empty. With no electricity or windows, it was always dark. It was just a place to get dressed in the morning or to sleep at night. I slipped inside, thankful for the cool quiet. I saw the letter first, taped to a package on which Caitlin wrote, "Happy belated birthday, Martin," also in purple glitter ink. I was very touched. I had heard that rich people in Zimbabwe had parties and get presents on their birthdays, but mine always passed like any other day. The only gift I ever received was when I turned 10. That evening, my father asked, "Martin, what's today?" "March 9th, I replied. And he said, "You know you're 10 today, right?" "Oh yeah," I said, smiling. "I almost forgot." He grabbed my hand and led me to the woman who sold soft drinks down the road. He told me to choose my favorite. "Fanta," I said. We usually got one every Christmas. My father would buy one for each kid, and we would each sip ours slowly, savoring every drop, hoping to make it last as long as possible. That was how we celebrated. The last Fanta I had was two Christmases ago, at the beginning of the economic troubled time. My father could only afford one that year, so we passed it around, taking small sips, holding the sunshine sweet liquid in our mouths for as long as possible before giving in to a swallow. I carefully peeled back the tape on Caitlin's gift and could not believe what was beneath the festive paper. An authentic, genuine Reebok t-shirt. Even the wealthy kids who went to my school and lived in houses and ate three meals a day could not afford such a precious thing. Their shirts were knockoffs from South Africa or Mozambique. This one had a tag that said, "Made in America," proof it was the real deal. I changed into it immediately. The material felt so good against my skin. I had never owned anything new in my life. Even our school uniforms, which we had to buy each year, were secondhand and often thin or torn in spots. This shirt was thick and smelled sweet, like ripe fruit. I wondered if Caitlin had sprayed it with perfume, or if this was just how a new thing smelled. Either way, it made me feel powerful, like Superman putting on his cape. Before I walked back outside, I pulled the Made in America tag out of the collar so people could see this was not some cheap knockoff from Mozambique. And then, smiling wide, with lungs so full of air, my chest puffed out, I walked outside. "Where did you get that?" Nation asked, amazed. "From Caitlin," I said, beaming. He grabbed the hem and rubbed it between his fingers. "Wow!" "It's the real deal," I said, and pointed to the tag. Nation whistled and slapped my back. "Now you look like a professional movie star, Martin," he said. I felt like one too. At least a dozen people commented on my new shirt and many asked to touch it. I wore it to greet my father that evening, but he barely seemed to notice. Usually he would parade around, bragging to all the neighbors that I got another gift from my American friend. Tonight he simply said, "I'm happy for you, son." I knew he was preoccupied. There were talks of layoffs at his work. A week before, he came home to say that the company had offered employees to be paid either in Zim dollars or in cups of mealie meal. Many chose food, but my father had to cover school fees as well as rent and food. I could see the concern all over his face. His eyes were always distant, his mouth downturned. He had been working at the mill more than 18 years. It was all he knew how to do. But if the rumors disturbed him, he did not say. Then one night, he came home drunk. That caused a big fight. My mother started screaming, How can you spend money on beer when your children go to bed hungry? He was too drunk to answer. I knew he was happy for Caitlin's kindness. He just had bigger things on his mind. I wore my new shirt to school that Monday beneath my uniform, with the tag sticking up out of my collar. When I finally took it off to wash it a week later, I stood guard as it dried to make sure no one stole it. My father wore it that weekend, and then some days I'd come home from school to see it on my mother or on Nation. I realized that ever since it arrived, it was always on somebody's body. I wanted Caitlin to know how much I appreciated her generosity, but once again was not sure how to do it. That same month, our Post and Telecommunications Corporation, or PTC, fired more than 600 people, causing the other workers to go on strike. Zimbabwe was in a full-fledged economic crisis. There were riots in Harare and Bulawayo. The government called in the army after people started smashing windows at grocery stores. The reasoning was, since we cannot afford to buy bread, then we must just take it. People were arrested or beaten as a result. A few even died, trampled or shot by police. Chisamba Singles was always rough. People always fought there. Sometimes it was a domestic dispute that spilled into the street. Other times, it was one man fighting another over an unpaid debt. These days, it was more often about food. Hunger makes people act crazy. I even witnessed one man knifing another for cutting the line to buy bread. I originally wanted to make Caitlin's earrings, but then I spotted a pair of black and white speckled ones at the market and thought they would be the perfect fit. I started working on weekends, carrying luggage for people at the nearby bus depot. Now that money was so tight at home, it was the only way to buy postage. And now the post office was on strike, I had more time to save up. The earrings cost 20 Zim dollars. After one day of carrying luggage, I had made $4 in tips. So I went to the market every day for 2 months to save up for Caitlin's gift. By the end of August, I had enough for the earrings and stamps. I wanted real stationery, not the back of used homework, which was all I had to write on. My father used to bring scraps from work, but now that the factory was doing so poorly, that luxury ended. I asked him for help anyway, hoping for a miracle. The very next day at dinner, he handed me 2 pieces of notepaper with the name and address of Mutare Paper Mill. "Official stationery," he said, explaining that his manager gave it to me as a gift. "He often asks about you, Martin," my father said, smiling. I think my father felt good that he could provide something special for me. That same night, after everyone else went to bed, I wrote Caitlin, using the fire embers for light. September 1998. Beloved Queen Caitlin. Hi, how are you? I did not reply quickly because the Zimbabwean PTC, where we buy stamps, was on strike. I am very sorry, but never worry, Martin is always there for his best, Caitlin. I will always reply, no wonder what happens, I swear. Thank you very much for the best present, the lovely, beautiful, high-quality shirt I have ever received. Whenever I walk, everyone stops me, touches the best quality, asks me where I got the wonderful shirt, and I feel special because of you. Oh, you are the greatest. I have really a loving American friend. Guess what? I bought some beautiful earrings at a traditional shop for my best friend Kate. I hope you will like them. Please keep up your excellent art of markers. I really love it. How do you do it? I added a 3-toed lion's paw, a heart, and a star, trying to mimic her handiwork, and added, I can do it with my pen, you see? While there was so much more I could have said, about the crisis, about how hard it was to save money for the stamps, about how hard life was becoming in my country, I decided to keep it light on purpose. I didn't want to trouble Caitlin with my life worries or scare her off. Plus, I didn't think a girl who could send me a dollar bill or Reebok shirt could ever understand. So instead, I simply wrote, as I have told you before, I am not a son of a wealthy dad. Your gift increased my clothes. Before, I had been left with only an old shirt of my dad, but your gift made me very happy. Lots of love, Martin. After I signed the letter, I placed the earrings in the middle of the page and then drew the image of two hands clasped in a handshake beneath them and wrote in all caps, Never lose hope. I will always reply. I underlined will and reply with three squiggly lines to make this point clear. I folded the letter around the earrings and then placed both in the envelope which my father had also secured for me. On that I wrote, Thanks again for the most beautiful shirt I have ever had. I love you.
August, 1998. Caitlin. When I had not heard back from Martin by July, I started to worry. He usually replied within a month. I figured he was busy with school and life. I certainly was. I had just started my first real job as a camp counselor, which meant leaving my house every morning at 7:30 and not getting home until 4:30 in the afternoon. It was fun entertaining six-year-olds all day, but exhausting. After work, I usually went straight home. I'd have dinner with my family and then hang out on our back deck with Heather or play flashlight tag with other neighborhood kids. It was pretty uneventful until my dad came home one night in early August looking upset. What is it, Rich? My mom asked. Have you heard the news? He asked. Mom clicked on the TV to the BBC, her favorite news channel. The screen filled with images of people running through the streets of some faraway city, blood pouring down their faces. Two big men were carrying a limp body in between them, all three splattered with blood. Small fires flared in the streets as police cars arrived and sirens sounded. Bombing at American Embassy in Nairobi flashed across the bottom of the screen, just as an announcer said, This was an orchestrated attack. Truck bombs were parked outside the American embassies in both Nairobi and Dar es Salaam. They were African capitals of countries not far from Zimbabwe. I knew this because ever since I started corresponding with Martin, I had been studying African geography. Why would anyone do that? I asked, dumbfounded. My dad shook his head and said, There are evil people in the world, Caitlin. Will they strike again? I asked. I was thinking about Martin. There were only two countries, Mozambique and Zambia, in between Tanzania and Zimbabwe. I knew Martin lived in Mutare, not in the capital, Harare, but still. The thought of him being affected in any way made my stomach queasy.
Honey, I have no idea, my dad said.
He was rattled. The following day, we learned that many people died from the attacks. The bombings marked the 8th anniversary of American troops arriving in Saudi Arabia. My dad used the word terrorists. I'd never heard that before and asked him to explain.
They planted a bomb that killed innocent people to make a political point, he said. They're cowards.
The bombings were front-page news for days. 224 people were killed in Kenya, 10 dead in Tanzania. I was worried Zimbabwe would be next. That August, my family went on vacation to the Thousand Islands in Canada. We spent a week on a houseboat and brought Romeo, but left Kava home because Romy was a better swimmer, and Mom was worried about how we would walk both of them if we were living on a boat. I was worried about being stuck in such a small place with my parents, especially when I realized we were basically sharing the same room. I had a bunk bed, they had a queen-size one, and the only thing that separated us was a curtain. It was like upscale camping, and we actually had a blast. Every morning, Romeo and I would jump off the boat to swim. He would paddle over to a nearby rock, or the shore so he could do his business. Then, we'd swim back to the boat. On that trip, we visited a bunch of old castles, including Bolt Castle. It was named for its owner, George Bolt, a very rich man who had built it for his wife. She died suddenly, weeks before they were meant to move in. The tour guide said that George was so heartbroken that he never visited the castle again, but kept it as a shrine to his wife. I was so touched by his story. The place was magical, like something out of a fairy tale. It had a drawbridge and gardens shaped like hearts. The castle itself had 120 rooms, including a ballroom and a piano room. The Alster Tower was a separate building, twice the size of my home, that George Bolt had built as a playhouse for his children. It made me sad to think they never got a chance to play there. During that trip, my mom took a million photos. As we were flipping through the stack the week after we got home, I picked out several to send to Martin. In one, I was wearing my mom's big-brimmed straw sun hat so I would not get sunburned on the top of my head. I was so blonde that people thought I was an albino and had such thin hair that my scalp sunburned easily. That shot was my mom's favorite picture of me. I liked it too. I wasn't looking right into the camera, but instead staring off into the sunset. That summer, I became obsessed with taking photos. My mom bought me an Advantix camera, which was so small it fit in my pocket, but it could still zoom in for close-ups or out for wide angles. I took 5 rolls of film on that trip alone and pasted them together to make collages when I got back home, one of which I pasted to my bedroom wall next to my Spice Girls and Backstreet Boys posters. Richie passed my room as I was doing it and poked his head in.
"What, suddenly you are an artiste?"
he said sarcastically, pronouncing it the French way, artiste. He hadn't come on vacation, as he was leaving for his freshman year at California University of Pennsylvania, which was 4 hours west of Hatfield. He wanted to keep working at Sears to save as much money as possible. "Whatever," I muttered. I was about to tell him to leave me alone, but I stopped. He was about to leave me totally alone that weekend. Instead, I said, "Shouldn't you be packing?"
"I am," he said.
I was thinking of a comeback like, "Actually, you are bothering me," but he was quicker.
"Send this to your African friend," he said,
as he tossed a t-shirt into my room. It fluttered like a stingray beneath water, before settling in a tangle on my pink rug. I picked it up and smiled. It was Nike, another brand Martin had mentioned in his letter. Richie was a jerk, but sometimes he was a nice jerk. "Thanks," I said, as he disappeared down the hall. I sent that with a few photos I had selected from our vacation, and several I took specifically for Martin of our backyard, our driveway, and the dogs. I wanted him to see what my life looked like in America. Several weeks into 8th grade, I finally heard from Martin. He sent me an envelope that had a slight bulge. I tore it open and saw a pair of earrings. They were tiny, hand-carved birds, painted black with small white polka dots. He said they were called guinea fowls, which sounded very exotic. I imagined they were very expensive. He also explained that it took so long to respond because the post office had been on strike. I was so relieved that was the reason. I was also thrilled that he loved the Reebok shirt. He made a strange comment at the end of the letter that it greatly increased his wardrobe. I had no idea what that meant and was so swept up by his generous gift that I did not give it much thought. That fall, big gold hoops were super popular. All my friends wore them, and I had at least a dozen pairs in various sizes and thicknesses. My new African earrings were unique. Nobody else could possibly have had them, and that made me feel special. Still, I was a little nervous the next morning as I slipped them on. Heather was the first to notice as we waited for the bus that morning.
"Nice earrings," she said.
"Thanks," I said, trying to sound nonchalant. Martin sent them to me.
Your pen pal? Heather asked.
Yeah, I responded.
He got them at a traditional shop.
That's awesome, she said, just as the bus pulled up.
At school, all my friends commented on them as well.
My pen pal sent them, I explained every time.
No one could believe that we were still in touch.
He still writes? Hallie asked at lunch.
My pen pal was lame, Allison chimed in. I got like one letter and that was it.
Mine too, Lauren said. Or maybe I didn't write back?
I can't remember because that was like forever ago.
He must really like you if he sent you jewelry, Allison said.
Caitlin insists that they are just friends, Lauren said.
But I think she's really in love with him.
I laughed at first, but really? I was annoyed.
Lauren knew we were close in a different way.
She actually sounded a little jealous, which pissed me off.
I wanted to share my news with someone who would understand how special my relationship with Martin was. Mrs. Miller was sitting at her desk correcting papers when I knocked on her door.
Caitlin, she said. What a nice surprise.
I just wanted to show you what my pen pal sent me, I said.
You're still in touch?
She said, clearly impressed.
Yeah, I said. He sent me 8 or 9 letters.
Oh, and these. I slipped off one of my earrings and laid it on her desk.
He bought them for me at a traditional shop, I explained.
How remarkable, she said.
I knew that, and wished Lauren would see it as well. But that might be hopeless. We'd been fighting, again. She never had time to hang out now that she was on the varsity basketball team. And I was getting to be closer friends with Hallie, who Lauren thought was lame. My favorite thing about Martin was that there was no drama. I could be entirely myself with him, and I felt he was doing the same with me. I looked forward to receiving Martin's letters more than going roller skating on Friday nights or to the mall on the weekends. He was introducing me to a whole other world, one I had never imagined before we started writing to each other. These earrings were a physical connection to him and to that world. I was so excited to send him my next package with Richie's shirt so I could do the same.
October 2nd, 1998. Dear Martin, hello, how are you? It was so nice to hear from you. Thank you so much for the lovely earrings that you sent. I wear them all the time, and all my friends love them too. I'm very glad you liked the shirt I sent. You will find a shirt in this package too. My brother suggested that I send it to you. He likes Nike too. I will also look for a Fila shirt for you. I'm glad you like the clothes we have in the U.S. I also included a postcard I bought him in Canada and several mechanical pencils I bought at Staples. They were my latest obsession, and I thought he'd like them too. I paused before finishing my letter. I'd been thinking about Martin in a new way ever since the embassy bombings. I could not wrap my head around why anyone would want to harm innocent people or understand how hatred could fuel such violence. Frankly, I didn't want to understand it. It made me see how truly special my relationship with Martin was. I continued, "As U.S. citizens, we are always mindful of the effects of terrorism. The 2 attacks on U.S. embassies in Africa were terrible. The radicals who caused this destruction of lives are so nasty and cruel. We hope it stops. Everyone must strive to get along, have an international friendship, like us." I also told him about our vacation and explained all the photos I was enclosing, including the one Mom took of me in the hat, as well as one with me and Romy, and those of our house and cars. In the driveway on the right, you will see my mom's Jeep. My dad drives a 1997 Nissan Maxima, and my brother drives a 1987 Nissan Maxima.
Richie took his car to university, so we have more room in our driveway now.
I ended with, "Thank you again for the lovely earrings. I will always think of you when I wear them."
At the bottom of the page, I added, BF4E. Best friend forever.
October 1998. Martin. I did not know anyone, besides the human resources manager at my father's work, who had one car, let alone three. That was not the only astonishing thing. Caitlin's house was as big as a castle, and in one photo, she was wearing jewelry on her teeth. I had never seen anything like that before. It was fascinating. I brought the stack of photos to school to show my friends. I knew they would not believe me if I said she lived in a castle and had three cars and mouth jewelry. I needed proof. At break that morning, Joe, Paul, and Raymond sat with me beneath the baobab tree outside our school. "This is her house," I said, taking out one photo at a time. "Impossible," Joe laughed. "It looks like the one our president lives in."
"It's huge," Paul agreed.
"You could fit five families in there, at least," Raymond chimed in. Raymond also lived in Shisamba Singles. Paul and Joe lived in a township nearby that was a bit nicer, but nothing like this. Then I showed them the photo of her parents on the houseboat. "This is the floating house they stayed on this summer," I said with mock authority. "In Canada, people live on boats." My friends shook their heads in disbelief.
"How is it possible?" Raymond asked.
I did not know the answer, and so quickly pulled out the next photo from the stack. It was Caitlin, wearing her mouth jewelry. "This is very popular in America," I explained. "Caitlin is going to send me a set so I can show you all how to wear it."
"Wow," Paul exclaimed. "She looks like a princess."
"You should marry her, Martin," Raymond said. "Then you could be a prince." We all laughed at that idea, and I held back what I was thinking, that my love for Caitlin was far deeper than that. The next photo was of Caitlin in bed with her dog, Rummy. "In America, dogs are treated like family members," I said. This photo actually shocked me. Zimbabwean dogs were scrawny and slept outside. They ate only if there were leftover scraps, which was never the case in my house. My friends were amazed, too.
"What happens if the dog poops?" Raymond asked.
We all burst out laughing. It was a good question, and I had no idea what the answer was. That afternoon, I gave my mother the stack of photos to store with the rest of Caitlin's letters. As I peered into the box, I saw how many pictures she had sent. There were over a dozen. It bothered me that I had only sent her one picture. Worse, she had asked again for another photo of me. Caitlin had been so generous. I had to reciprocate. This meant we had to hire a photographer to come to our house to take the photo, develop it, and bring it back later. That was expensive. Still, I asked my father to consider it. He knew how important this was to me, so he promised he would do his best to find the money for a photographer. Before I put all the photos away in what had now become Caitlin's box, I selected the photo of her wearing the big straw hat. I had already started calling her Queen, and in that photo, she really looked like one. I pinned that one to our wall next to the first one she sent me. To buy some time, I decided to send Caitlin an African bangle I bought at the market, which I imagined was the closest thing we had to the American malls that Caitlin seemed to visit every weekend with her friends. The Sakubva market was 5 kilometers from my house and called Musika Wehuku, or the market where chickens are sold. My mother bought our food and other life necessities there. It was adjacent to the central bus station, where I had started working every weekend carrying luggage for tips in order to make pocket money to keep up my correspondence with Caitlin. The bus station was chaotic, but I loved wandering through the market. It was the size of 3 football fields and filled with vendors selling all kinds of things like fruit, vegetables, and peanuts. You could also buy beef and live chickens there, as well as roasted mice, a popular snack in Zimbabwe.
We used to hunt them in the fields around Chisamba Singles when I was younger. It was hard work to catch a small mouse. People also sold fake sunglasses called Prada or Gucci.